Okay, here we are back. Hold on, I got to finish something here. I got two more letters to put in here. Okay. Very good. Okay. Now, it's Monday. It feels like Thursday. It feels like I've gone five rounds with Tyson and lost in a four-round fight. It's not good out there. It's very difficult each day to go through all of this, to try to organize it, to try to present it in a logical and intelligent way, especially in the face of so many who are doctors, who are allegedly scientists, who are lying through their teeth, who have sold out for big money. They all have their own shops and their stores, and they have dozens and dozens of private labeled, that means their own label, various liquids, powders, pills, capsules, each of which you can't live without. I have never seen more hucksterism in my life, ever. It's disgusting. So, and I can tell you this, I've had my own store, as it were. It's called the homepage. And I've been selling some of these products for 15 to 20 years. And they are proven by time, proven by results. And I'm not saying go buy them. I don't care. It's up to you. I'm just telling you, look at these people who come up with their... this guy named Ardis, his private label is called Ardis Labs. I'm still laughing at that one. Ardis Labs. What does that suggest to you? Oh, a 50,000 square foot building where all these things are manufactured? No, they're private labeled. It's all, I've never seen more scammers, hucksters, carny acts in my life. And they're preying on the sheep, they're preying on the sick, they're preying on those who are miserable and who are dying. And I think it is criminally as obscene as it gets. And I could name a lot of names. I think you can too, so I'm not going to. All right. My partner Erica is sitting by somewhere in New England, 14,000 miles away from me. Are you there?
No, I'm here, Jeff.
You sound like you're right next door. It's amazing.
I know. That's technology.
No.
We're in the same headspace.
Yeah. Get a little closer to your whatever you're talking in if you can.
Oh, I'm here. Is there a problem with the audio tonight? Because I wasn't hearing much earlier.
It's a bit low.
Okay.
All right, I turned you up here anyway. All right, now, there are a lot of things happening, and where does one start? It's kind of that crazy. But I don't mean to drag you into this, but I ran across another store today, or shop. And there must have been 100 different things for sale at this site, led by one fairly well-known doctor. And it's common. It's just all over the place. They're all making money on supplements. And I just find it to be repulsive, personally. I'm not speaking for you. It's just taking advantage of a situation and people who are desperate, they are afraid, they don't know what to do, they don't know where to place their trust or confidence, and whatever. So that's my spiel.
Well, you know, it is a pandemic, and there's opportunity for money to be made off people's desperation. People want to feel like they're being proactive in some way. They're fearful. And, you know, the ironic thing is... that, you know, what we've come to know about the spike protein, you know, a very, very aggressive immune response might not be the best thing.
All right, this is a headline, a story for all of you. I want you to pay close attention to this. I think we briefly mentioned it last time around on Friday, but this needs to be developed a little bit. You think right now, intuitively, and in most cases you'd be right, that what you want is a robust immunological, very competent response to the spike protein, for example. Okay? That's what you want. That's what you think you want. Tell us more.
Well, that's not always the best thing. I mean, there are certain viruses where antibodies are actually... infection enhancing. It's not the protective arm for that particular virus. It's the wrong response. You really ideally want a T cell, robust T cell response, or an innate or cell mediated immune response. And that is something that is rarely talked about. People only think about antibodies. If I have antibodies, I'm protected. No. With coronavirus, it's predicted, very predictive, that antibodies are indicative of being infection enhancing. They might save you from one round of the infection, but the next one, they could prove to be deadly. And we've certainly seen that with cats. And I think the monkeys, as well as the mice in the animal studies. But that was a well-known phenomenon in cats. They were trying to come up with a vaccine for cats since the 1980s. And no problem to generate antibodies to these surface proteins on the exterior of the virus, including the spike. But they were not protective, and in fact, they were infection enhancing and were predictive of a bad outcome for the cat, oftentimes lethal. So it may be the same here. I mean, this spike protein is already what's called a super antigen. So your body is, there are sequences and peptides on this protein that antagonize and irritate the immune system already. Do you want to throw fuel on the fire? And part of the pathology from the spike protein, meaning that its potential to cause disease and harm, is the way your body reacts to it, the way it interacts with it.
When you hear the word antigen, think of bad guy, okay?
Yeah, that's a foreign protein.
Bad guy. All right. Antibody, good guy. We're going to keep it simple.
So having antibodies, it sets the stage for if and when you do encounter the virus, the full replicating virus, that these antibodies set the stage for a cytokine storm, which, you know, if you remember way back, it wasn't the virus that was killing people. It was the cytokine storm, the body's reaction to the virus. It was an overzealous immune response, and there was widespread tissue damage resulting
from
that.
That was before we knew about epitopes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yes, these epitopes, because there's so much similarity between the sequences in the spike and human proteins, when you make antibodies against the spike, it's quite possible you're also making antibodies against your own proteins.
And we already know.
Many of which
know,
are in the female reproductive tract,
that's
coincidentally.
Right. No coincidences. No more. We don't know, ultimately. We haven't identified, or whoever's doing this identification work, we don't know what the match to each of these epitopes, in fact, are. The epitope is not a direct copy, 100% copy of a protein in your ovary, if you're a woman, for an example, wherever it happens to be. But there are a lot of them in the reproductive tract. It's a sequence of peptides that is close enough to trick your immune system into thinking that normal protein in the ovary is what's in the spike, the epitope in the spike. It's almost identical. It's called homologous. It's a copy. It's really close. It doesn't have to be complete, though, to trick your immune system. So that's where the immunological attack on your own reproductive tract comes from. It comes from the epitopes that have been planted in the synthetic spike protein. And how many have been found approximately that go into the female reproductive tract? How many epitopes that were built into the spike protein to trick the immune system into attacking the reproductive system? How many? 26, 27 that we know about?
27 throughout, you know, in wide range of all types of different proteins having to do with, you know, the egg maturing, implantation, the progesterone receptor. I mean, it's pretty much anything and everything that has to do with being fertile.
Can you spell sterilization? Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't know ultimately exactly how many epitopes are in the spike protein. Each one of them, in all likelihood, is a near direct copy, close, to another sequence of or group of proteins somewhere else in your body. Maybe in your heart, maybe in your liver. I don't know, but we do know they're sure as hell concentrated, and those that have been identified will cause your immune system to go after those similar proteins, real proteins, in the reproductive tract. So this thing has been put together by ET, in my view. I think there was an ET involvement. It is so diabolically diverse in its ability to cancel life. It's a killer. It is a mass killer. That's what it does. It was never experimental. Don't buy that crap. They rolled this thing out there, created, tested, deployed as what it is. A biological weapon to kill, kill, and kill again. That's what it's doing.
Yep. In a stealth way, or maybe not so stealth, but...
Well, it's right
it
out in the open now.
It's obvious to people by now.
They've got it all covered up, Erica. People can't see it. No, he died of cancer. Oh, no, he died of a heart attack. Oh, no, he had CJD and died of brain disease. Took 6 months. It was horrible. Blah, 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 blah. This is all synthetic. It's artificially created. They turned it loose. They injected it into people, and the people are now dying. And people who didn't get injected apparently are on the verge of dying. They're getting sick as hell. And they didn't do anything to deserve this.
No.
It's called shedding. We'll talk more about that tonight as well. Now, you brought something up, very interesting discovery. 1993, Nick Szabo wrote a paper. Permission to copy and distribute unaltered, with attributions intact, freely granted, wrote Nick back in 1993. It's called Green Goo, Life in the Era of Humane Genocide. Think about that one. Life in the Era of Humane Genocide. Nick Szabo. That's S-Z-A-B-O. Tell us what he said.
Well, the advent. This is when he was a student, I guess, at MIT back in 1993. And I believe it's the same Nick Szabo of Bitcoin fame. He was a member of a group called the Extropians, which are the forerunners of the transhumanists. And this was the advent, really, of nanotechnology as we know it today. And there was much talk about black goo and gray goo having the ability to self-replicate and eventually consume and take over the existing life on this planet. There would be no stopping it. And then you can carry that over to the ability of nanotechnology to merge with synthetic biology and basically build all kinds of designer viruses to do whatever you want them to do, and in this case he's referring to turning them into weapons and targeting groups or humane genocide. Whenever someone in control determines that there's too many people, well, you release one of these things, and many times people won't recognize what's happening, and by the time they do, they're dead.
No, and don't forget, there are no such things as viruses. God. Did they cleverly split science in half with that outrageous, disgusting lie? How many papers have been written about viruses in the last 100 years, approximately?
Oh, countless. What have they identified? At least 11,000 to date, if not more.
These people are all crazy. They didn't know what the hell they were talking about. They're just nuts, delusional.
They want to believe their exosomes. No, this is foreign genetic material. You have components of your immune system, toll-like receptors and RIG-1 receptors that are designed to detect foreign sequences of genetic material, mRNA or DNA. So if this was not a risk, why would you have an immune system that's, exquisitely capable of detecting these sequences? Well, it's to keep them out. You don't want to be translating foreign RNA or DNA and making foreign proteins.
Right. Watch out for these doctors who are saying viruses don't exist. Secondly, watch out for these doctors who have these enormous stores or stoa. They have these huge stores. And it's incredible. And the prices are through the roof. They're making a fortune bleeding the sheep, squeezing every dollar they can out of these poor suffering people. You don't need them. Go to any health food store, a good one, and talk to the nutritionist. All right? Anyway, it's all pretty repugnant to anybody who's got scruples and honesty. They're just scrounging people. It's sickening to me. Much has been made, writes Nick, of the speculative possibility of gray goo, self-replicating nanomachines that consume most biological and industrial materials, destroying civilization in the process. I had a top flight expert on nanotech on the program. Some of you go back that far. And he was on once a month. And he said one of the easiest things to make with nanotech are little machines, self-replicating machines that go into a living cell and reduce it to gray goo. They kill it. That is easy, he said. Well, he didn't last long. He was on 4 or 5 months, I think, and then he wouldn't answer his phone. Gone. He said too much. Okay? So this was gray goo. The paper Gray Goo by Shabo came out in 93. I started this program in 94, so it was right around there. And it was quite a shocker.
Green goo to reflect the biology part of it.
Right.
It's green.
I call it gray because of my history with it. But yes, it's green goo. You're 100% right. He called it gray goo. Now the actual paragraph I just read, Shabo says gray goo. Exactly. He did say gray. It's right there in quotes. Much has been made of the speculative possibility of gray goo, self-replicating nanomachines that consume most biological and industrial materials, destroying civilization in the process. Gray goo, writes Shabo, relies on the very advanced version of postulated atomic precision robots capable of fine, very high-frequency control over chemical reactions, and is thus theoretical possibility in the distant future. Well, I was told in 95 that it was a done deal. They had mastered that easily. It was very simple to do. But another weapon of replication and destruction, writes Shabo, is being created in biotech labs today for the specific purpose of population control. These viruses, designed to eliminate species from entire continents and their potentially from the entire planet, might well be called, reflecting their ecological purpose, green goo. And he's using both terms, but green goo is the formal term. Yes, I heard all about this many years ago, and those of you who have been around that long probably remember. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he vanished. He did reappear years later with a new book on potassium and hearts. Had nothing to do with nanotech. So they told him to get your act together or else, I guess. And so he wrote about hearts and potassium. And I had him back on and said, how come we can't talk about it? He wouldn't answer me. He just didn't answer. So anyway, that's when the lid came down on it all. So Nick Shabo deserves credit for standing up, and I wish I could honor that guest because he was very brave. And I used to ask him, I said, aren't you afraid of getting in trouble? Well, no, not really. I haven't been told. No, but he was told, and that was the end of him. All right. Next. That's your cue.
Oh, viral coercion? Was that where we're at? Or central? Yeah, viral coercion. Or are we at the next?
Never coerce a virus. That's dangerous.
Okay, I got it. The first use of genetically engineered viruses for population control has been announced in Australia. Biotech engineers say they can completely eradicate two species of mammal, the red fox and the European rabbit, from the entire continent. Previously, viruses were imported from other continents for this purpose. In 1859, overeager British colonizers introduced the rabbit and red fox to Australia. Rabbits soon became a major pest. As early as 1888, Louis Pasteur suggested killing off the rabbits by deliberately introducing a disease. And in 1950, somebody actually tried it. Rabbits in Brazil carry a harmless virus called myxomatosis, spread by mosquitoes. But when European rabbits were exported to Brazil, over 99% of them died from this disease. In 1950, the virus was introduced into rabbit warrens in a remote region of Australia. Ultimately, the disease spread through Australia, moving most rapidly when moist conditions or standing water encouraged the mosquito vectors. At first, the 99% death rate held, but the rabbit and virus population co-evolved to a non-lethal equilibrium. Even so, over 80% of all the rabbits in Australia had been killed before the epidemic played itself out. And then we come to humane genocide. The virus currently being genetically engineered to eradicate the red fox in Australia can produce more complete results in a more humane manner. The virus turns female red fox's immune system against male sperm, rendering females infertile. This may be the first truly effective green goo. Because it is fine-tuned by genetic engineering and because new viruses can be designed and released to take up where the last virus petered out, these new viruses can overcome genetic adaptation of the target population and reduce it to extinction. Moreover, the creation of such viruses is well-understood technology. Deploying green goo targeted at human populations, either specific races or our entire species in general, would be, like the Red Fox virus program, a relatively simple and inexpensive biotech project, well within the capabilities of hundreds of biotech labs around the planet. Because sterilization is a far more humane form of genocide than gas chambers, some of the ecologists and green activists might have little objection to releasing engineered viruses to reduce human populations to their, quote, ideal level. The humane nature of a sterility virus also makes it far more effective than traditional forms of genocide, which involve visible, violent death, and thus stir the passions of people into resistance. A sterility virus not only blocks human reproduction, it also makes an end run around the genetically evolved emotions, which motivate such reproduction. Headline from today. Defense against such a virus is a rational assessment of its consequences and the ability to motivate extreme, prolonged defense based on that emotionally neutral knowledge.
You can find this under our names and guests as well. We put that up there for you. Oh, my. There was a good headline, real simple. Dr. Brzezinski, the brilliant man who cured so many people of cancer, he said his cancer cures are finally getting approved. You know why? Because everyone who's taken the shot is developing cancer. So what the hell? Let him go. You know?
God.
So there you go. We're still looking for evidence of the gas chambers. Unfortunately, the one at Auschwitz was a bomb shelter converted to look like a gas chamber after the war ended on orders of Uncle Joe Stalin, the true butcher of all time. So there you go. But Nick didn't know that.
No, that was hidden.
Okay. Monkeypox update. Fags and dogs. This was a pretty disgusting story, and I ran it a couple of days ago. These two males, fags, had a dog. It was a, the hell was it? An Italian greyhound or something?
Yeah.
A greyhound, yes. So the dog was diagnosed, the first dog diagnosed with monkeypox. I'll let you figure out how the dog got the monkeypox and where the lesions were found in the dog. It had to do with near his tail. Get the point? Yes. So at this game we're considering, we need to start thinking about, do gays really want to be given the right to own dogs? Seriously?
Yeah.
Bestiality?
I know.
Bestiality is not bestiality. And this poor dog was obviously ravaged and was given monkeypox. Where do we draw the line? And some of you will say, well, yeah, dogs, okay, but how about these gay couples like Buttigieg and his mister, or is it miss? Mrs.? And the little baby they were allowed to adopt. I don't know. Do you let gay males adopt male babies? I don't think so. You see, all logic is gone now. It's just gone. It's gone under the guise of rights. They have rights. Yeah. Look up the term chicken hawk and homosexuality. Figure it out. All right. And I know some of you listening are homosexual. Hey, more power to you. But leave the dogs alone. Leave the kid alone. Try to modify your lifestyle a little bit.
Mm.
We're supposed to be an intelligent, advanced Homo sapien style species. It's just not looking that way at all. All right. There's your monkeypox update. Oh, Meryl Nass. That was a video, wasn't it?
Oh, I think it was just it might have been a Substack article that she wrote.
All right, let me pull this up real quick. All right, give us an intro, please.
She basically summed up what we've already said here, they're making it appear as though there's going to be a looming shortage of the JYNNEOS vaccine, which is the replication incompetent vaccinia virus that's been...
You called that
weeks ago, yeah. So it's, you know, they're creating some idea that there's a shortage, which will provide the rationale to roll out the ACAM 2000, which that's been the one and only smallpox vaccine in the national stock pile of smallpox vaccines. So they have plenty of that one, but there are serious drawbacks with the ACAM 2000. And at least one in every 175 people who get it will develop either pericarditis or myocarditis or both. You could be seriously ill, and if you're immune compromised in any way, it could be lethal. I mean, you do develop a bona fide productive infection with vaccinia,
right,
from this vaccine, which is presumed to be protective against smallpox and most of the viruses in that pox family. They're saying now that the JYNNEOS is not working to stop the spread of monkeypox.
You called that 2 months ago.
You can assume that perhaps, okay, the vaccine doesn't work. Or number two, maybe what they have isn't really monkeypox. We could surmise that maybe the vaccine isn't really a vaccine and it's something else.
In other words,
I mean,
why
the simplest explanation is it doesn't work.
Simplest explanation is correct. They love to put needles in people because they don't have to tell anybody what's in the damn syringe. Okay?
Now, you know, people want to believe, and I would caution you on this, that yes, it might be the result of the vaccine or the injections that have been given in the past 18 months, but we know they've been playing with pox viruses in these labs for several decades now. And at one point, they were able to, I guess this guy Mark Buller, who mysteriously died in 2017, was one of the world's premier virologists in the field of orthopox viruses, meaning smallpox, cowpox, horsepox, vaccinia. He mysteriously died, but not before he did quite a bit of research in the pox family of how to weaponize these pox viruses, aerosolize them when they're not normally aerosolized. And at one point, some Australian researchers had made a mouse pox virus inadvertently lethal by inserting a particular gene in it for IL-4, interleukin-4, and rather they were actually trying to make a better vaccine by inserting this, but they actually did the opposite. They made it almost 100% lethal. And Mark Buller, expanded on that research and made a virus that, and this sounds awfully like this tabletop exercise that they've put out there for us. The mice had been vaccinated against mouse pox. It did not protect them against this lethal version of it that Mark Buller's lab created, and it was resistant to the therapeutics. Whatever antivirals they had on hand were completely ineffective. So it was 100% lethal with that one insertion and maybe a couple more modifications. They have a long legacy of playing with pox viruses, and I wouldn't let your guard down on this one.
What about the guy in Canada, Eastman, who created...
Oh, David Evans.
Evans. He created a non-existent. He created a virus from scratch. He built it.
Yes. This is another interesting case of back in 2017. He was probably working on it before then. But he could have requested a culture of the virus from the CDC for his research, but because it was for commercial interests or commercial development, right, he assumed that the CDC would not allow him to have that. If the CDC is going to let anybody play with viruses, it has to be for research purposes only, not to be developing and selling for profit. So he decided to just, I know how to make this. And so, yes, we now have the ability to chemically synthesize DNA fragments and then string them together in the proper sequence to make the virus. If you have the sequence, you can reconstruct the virus with these DNA fragments. And that's what he did, which, given the complexity of pox viruses, that was no small feat. And that takes some real knowledge and talent to do that, and he did it. It was a viable virus, it was infective, and he was able to proceed with that. Now, curiously, this same David Evans is involved in a company called Tonix Pharmaceuticals out of New York, and they are currently developing a SARS-CoV-2 vaccine using a horsepox vector. It's a fully replication-competent horsepox that expresses the spike protein of the coronavirus. How frightening.
Agreed. All right. Now,
you wonder, to my knowledge, I think they only have a BSL-2 level lab at the University of Alberta where he works.
See, that's crazy. crazy. Okay, here's Meryl Nass, just briefly. Gosh, we're running out of time already. When the biodefense experts at Johns Hopkins warn you off the ACAM 2000 vax for monkeypox, you know it is a really bad vaccine. But they still don't tell you the whole story, Dr. Meryl Nass wrote yesterday. On August 9th, Stat News reported that the U.S. Health Secretary recently declared monkeypox as a public health emergency, paving the way for emergency use authorizations of additional vaccines or vaccine regimens to fight the disease, blah, blah, blah. The article is up there. You can read it in headlines. Merrill Nass, N-A-S-S, consistently coming up with outstanding information, although a very strange linkage between Merrill Nass and Dr. Bobby Malone. Still can't figure that one out.
That's a head-scratcher. Time will tell.
I definitely scratched my head over that. All right. Now, we have Steve Kirsch interviewing Dr. Ryan Cole. How to identify a person killed by the COVID vaccine? I mean, the quick answer is he or she dead? That's how. 80% vaxxed. Think about it. Don't laugh at this stuff. It's serious. Please laugh. We've got to laugh. God.
Well, it's just so absurd. It isn't funny. It's absurd.
No, it's called black humor. All right, so how long do we play this video?
Oh, you could start at the beginning. I mean, the gist of it is this, that if you can get a coroner to agree to do an autopsy, and you would think in the case of all these sudden adult deaths that would warrant an autopsy. Nobody just drops dead for no reason. Don't you want to know why? So if you do have the good fortune of having somebody that's agreeable to doing an autopsy, they need to be specifically looking for the spike protein. A normal autopsy will not uncover that. So there are, you know, special methods and procedures that need to be followed in order to take the tissue samples and to be looking specifically for the spike. And, you know, you will probably find it. Now, of note is that not everybody that dies from the vax has these rubbery clots. So just because they don't have the clots does not mean they could not have died from some other consequence of the spike protein, such as myocarditis,
CJD.
Or a range of any others. I mean, so it's not, if you don't see those clots, that does not mean the spike didn't do damage in some other way.
Correct.
But so okay. If you are going to have an autopsy, make sure you tell them specifically you want to look for the spike protein and then the damage that it caused.
And will they specifically look for it or not? Depends on whose thumb they're under.
Right?
You don't know what the hell they do in there. All right. Here's a message from Big Al Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, or Pfizer. So he says, this is from, what's the little one with, Twitter. Okay, it's got the little bird. All right. I would like to let you know, writes Big Al, that I have tested positive for COVID-19. I am thankful to have received 4 doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine, and I am feeling well while experiencing very mild symptoms. I am isolating and have started a course of my company's Paxlovid. This sounds familiar to you just a little. Sound like Creeper Biden or people that need to hide out, they come down with COVID. Not saying that Big Al needs to hide out, but he also says, we have come so far in our efforts to battle the disease that I am confident I will have a speedy recovery. I am incredibly grateful for the tireless efforts of my Pfizer colleagues who worked to make vaccines and treatments available for me and people around the world. Paxlovid is not approved, but is authorized for emergency use by the FDA to treat mild to moderate COVID-19 in high-risk patients, 12 years of age and up, weighing at least 40 kilograms, with positive results of SARS-CoV-2 viral testing. So that's from Big Al today. It's like Creeper Biden. What,
well,
you got it twice?
And Fauci before him.
Oh, they all, yes. Please. And we're supposed to honestly think that they took these shots?
No.
Not a chance.
No way. Mm-mm.
Never.
Now, this is all theater.
All right. Here's Kirsch now, interviewing Dr. Ryan Cole. We'll just play a couple minutes. Here we go.
Hi, Steve Kirsch. I'm executive director of the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. And I have with me Ryan Cole. He's a pathologist who's been looking into all of these weird things with these mysterious blood clots and COVID deaths. And
Erica, what's mysterious about these blood clots, otherwise known as amyloid clots?
Not much.
Thank you.
We know pretty much why they're there.
And if you look at the top on the right side, I've sort of put the immortalized it, the story we did explaining amyloid clots, what they are, how they occur. It's up there for you to listen to anytime. It's at the top of the right side, the archive, where you see the three graphic illustrations of what some people think the spike looks like. All right, here we go.
Ryan has had a lot of experience in this area. And I got a note recently from a a technician. He's a technician for a medical examiner. So, you know, when you die, it goes to the medical examiner sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't. But if it goes to the medical examiner, then the technician's actually the ones that do the work. And this technician was saying that he was finding these strange blood clots, which are not really blood clots. They're clots. And
Jesus, excuse me. How many months ago did we do this?
I don't know. Three?
It's been yes, at least 3 months. And, I mean, I'm glad to see this out there, but come on, gang. Is Dr. Dolores Cahill the only one in the world who has the strength of character to stand up and tell the truth? And even John O'Looney pulled out these clots and showed them. So did Hirschman. So I don't know where Kirsch has been, but we'll listen to another little bit, then we got to do a couple other things here.
Huge, and they're big, and they, you know, you can't live with these things in your body. And yet they're finding these weird, well, we'll call them telltale clots.
No, let's call them amyloid clots, dimwit.
And we're only finding these in people. It only started after the vaccines rolled out, right? These clots? We've never seen them before.
Correct.
Okay. So anyway, this technician was saying that he tried to get the pathologists to take a look at these clots, and they said, we are not going there. We're not touching it. We're not interested, and they don't want to see it. So this stuff is there in the bodies, but people are deliberately looking the other way. Now, have you seen that? Do you know of this as well from your personal experience, or is this new, what I just told you?
No, I have received similar reports from individuals that are seeing these things. I've received reports from nurses in hospitals that try to bring to the attention of the treating.
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't take any more. These people are so far behind the curve. It's all up there in video. In fact, we have a video up now showing a beating human heart in open heart surgery being opened up. It does appear to be a ventricle potentially pushing the blood into the aorta. Now, this heart, this person, is on an ECMO machine or a heart and lung machine, okay? So you're not seeing blood being squirted out of the ventricle. They open the ventricle and reach in with forceps. You'll see it. It's over on the right-hand side of the, in the archive. And they pull out this, how long was that thing? 8 to 10 inches?
Oh,
an amyloid
gosh.
Clot. It wasn't a blood clot. Yes, it had blood on it, of course, because it's the environment it's living in and forming in is blood. But it's a proteinaceous amyloid clot, and a guy pulled it out right there. So pretending not to know what this is not doing anybody any good. It's like they're trying to hold back the knowledge curve. It's just
oh, yeah.
To me it's disgusting. Okay, And so there we go. All right. Enough of that. You can see this interview up there as well if you'd like to watch. It's over an hour long. But it's these things that aren't being said. It's the lie of omission that is particularly galling to yours truly. I just can't stand it. Okay. Let's do a few human stories here. We got about 3 or 4 minutes. Where would you like to start?
Oh, I've got to get to the page. We had some left over from Friday, I think.
Yeah, we had shedding baby, shedding miscarriage, shedding nurse, shedding sores. Okay, so shedding baby would be number one. It would be the second one in that group. Go ahead.
My sister's friend's baby, age 2, has had to have 3 teeth taken out as they are rotting. She brushes his teeth constantly, and no bad teeth run in either side of the family. She's had her booster, too. It's definitely something to do with the vaccine.
Go ahead.
Okay. I had a miscarriage in May, and my naturopath is guessing that it was caused from shedding. Someone answers to that. I'm so sorry. I've lost 4 in a span of 8 to 9 months, and my primary believes it's the shedding. All other medical professionals think I developed an autoimmune disorder, but not my primary. You know, let's hope.
Yeah, okay. The next one. So, I'm the unvaccinated RN in one of the most vaccinated counties in California. I have ivermectin from a Colorado doctor. The new regimen is ivermectin twice a day when actively sick. And I parenthetically add, please do not use ivermectin prophylactically. When you're sick, that's when you need it. Back to the reader. My vaxxed and boosted coworkers getting COVID a second or third time in the span of 6 months, and very infectious cases indeed. I've been doing well, but 3 days ago began intense fatigue and spitting up blood and having nosebleeds again. The twice daily ivermectin helped it in one day. I'm on vacation in Hawaii right now and was very upset to see I was affected again at the beginning of my vacation, and I don't take vacations, and I take ivermectin daily usually. I don't know if the start of the VADS type of frequent COVID. In other words, he's questioning whether her immune system is fading. That was predicted. Very sad. I cannot help them, or I risk losing my job. They are all so brainwashed. They are all frequently sick anyways, but they are testing positive again. Okay, next.
Both my sons got huge mouth ulcers, which they have never had before, within the same 24 hours. There was no substantial change in their diet or sleep to attribute them to. Then, within the next 24 hours, I did too. And I heard this a lot from other unvaxxed parents at school about them and their children at the time. Another parent from the school got a terrible cold sore erupt, having had freshly vaxxed friends come to stay, who didn't say they were vaxxed until they had been there a week. They say it can cause dormant retroviruses such as herpes and EBV to resurface. Now, another possibility for these cold sores or mouth ulcers, is catalase deficiency. And if you remember from our program on Friday, we talked about the heme being destroyed.
Critical.
And one. Yeah,
critical.
Yeah. Well, so the one enzyme in the body that is dependent on having heme to function properly is catalase, and catalase will take hydrogen peroxide and turn it into water and oxygen. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have enough, you're going to have a buildup of hydrogen peroxide, and presumably these mouth ulcers, that they have been linked to a catalase deficiency. So what they're seeing there might be an indication that their heme is, or their red blood cells are being destroyed, and the heme's being released, as the spike protein is known to do.
Keep in mind the Kirsch Cole video a few minutes ago. they should both be talking about amyloid clots, amyloidosis, etc. They're not. What does that tell you? Should tell you a lot if you've been listening to this program. All right, here's another one real quick. Yes, talking about smells. Yes, I have noticed the same. On windy weather days, the smell can come from 100 meters away. I know which of my neighbors are vaccinated by the smell on their doors in the corridor of our apartment building. Luckily, my neighbor on the floor I live in is unvaxxed, but the smell from the other floors is still coming to my entrance hall from the corridor. How fun is that? All right, grab the last one there.
Vaxxed and pregnant. My coworker conceived and was double jabbed, also received a booster and is due in 3 weeks. I am really worried for her as she is very asleep about the jab. Now, didn't you hear something about somebody that was delivered a baby and seemed okay for a while, and then it developed some serious health issue?
Right. Remember, this is all carefully, not every single person, but this whole panorama of death is fused. If people were all to get these shots and die at the same time, obviously eyebrows would go up and there would be a big problem.
Right.
So it's fused. It depends on a lot of different things. Your innate immune system, how healthy you are, et cetera, how lucky you are. But that's why the Deagle reports, I think, project January 1st, 2025, to bring the population of this country down to less than 100 million. We will see. We will see. We don't know.
Yeah, and
for
as
sure,
for these babies that I guess are fortunate enough to be born to these vaxxed mothers, you're not going to know what's going on at the level of the chromosomes at least for a couple years. I mean, remember the estrogen there that they were giving, that it wasn't apparent there was a problem until these females reached puberty, or maybe even adulthood, and they had double the rate of various reproductive cancers. What was that? Depo-provera, was that it? Or
might have been.
I'm drawing a blank.
I don't know. No, dopamine.
But, no, not dopamine.
Just a little humor. All right.
No, but you cannot tell just from a physical appearance what's going on a molecular level, on a genetic level with these babies. I would just hate to be one of these parents that got shot up during the pregnancy or before the pregnancy. You're not gonna have that hanging over your head for years.
Forever.
Forever, really? Yeah, for the life of that child.
Hmm. All right, we are out of time and then some. Thank you all for being here and paying attention. This program will be posted, as all of them are, up on the homepage later this evening. So you're welcome to share it, pass it around. Hope you do. And Steve Kirsch is a good guy. I didn't mean to knock him, but unless and until I hear people start to talk about amyloidosis, in my view, they're either way behind the curve and uninformed, or they're doing it on purpose. That word should be a household word by now.
Yeah, it should.
Thanks, young lady.
Okay.
Good job.
My pleasure, Jeff. All right.
Okay.
Have a good evening, everyone. Good night.
All right. We'll be right back with the amazing Dick Allgaier coming up next.